already have. We'll get to those as well in just a minute. Maria, welcome. Good to see you.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity, Mark.
It's great to have you here. So this time around, you're on the ballot. You have to collect signatures.
We do. The Green Party, third parties in Maryland have to reestablish themselves every 4 years. The Green Party has to collect 10,000 signatures by the end of the year in order to remain on the ballot. And we are very, very busy petitioning all over the state.
By the end of the year?
Yeah, by December 31st.
But the election's November the 2nd.
Yes. And certainly, if I get a certain percentage of the vote, that doesn't negate our having to petition, but it delays it for a year, so we get another year to collect the signatures. And of course, we have to get more than 10,000 because, you know, signatures are disqualified. So we shoot for about 16,000 or so signatures.
So I'm in the state of Maryland like this, and we'll talk about the state of third party candidates in the state of Maryland during the course of this hour. But it is clear, I think, for a lot of people, I guess for you as well, that the Green Party probably will not win the governor's race between Robert Ehrlich and Martin O'Malley, Republican and Democrat, respectively. And so, but you run. And so I'd like to talk to you about why it is you run. What is it you think that running as a Green Party candidate does for you, for the state? Mm-hmm. Why are you running?
Well, first of all, 58% of Americans in a recent Gallup poll this year, just taken recently, believe that we need third parties. And I look at it this way. If you like your life and if you like your government and you think we're better off than we ever have been, then there's certainly no need for a third party. But you and I both know, as well as your listeners, most people are extraordinarily dissatisfied with the Democrats and the Republicans. I mean, they take huge amounts of money from corporate and special interests to get elected. They cannot and do not represent the people that vote for them. Now, as far as me personally, I am committed to working for peace and justice, and I'm committed to making the Green Party as viable as it possibly can be in Maryland. I think Maryland desperately needs us. Maryland is controlled by a Democratic Party machine. So for me, it's what I'm doing for the Green Party and what I'm doing for voters. They need to have a choice. We need to have a choice. So, you know, as I said, it's not me personally. It's really for our democratic process, and because I'm such a strong believer in a third party. I could register as a Democrat and run for office and maybe get elected, but I won't do that. That's not where my values are.
I mean, a lot of people will – most people who would vote for someone in the Green Party would be people who are neither Democrat nor Republican or independents, or they are Democrats who say, yeah, I need to vote somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Probably Republican votes are rare for Green parties than Democratic votes. So people are often reluctant to vote in this country for a third party because they think third parties aren't viable and it is throwing away our vote and letting the other side win. In this side, people are saying the Republicans.
Right. Well, that's a catch-22, and I'm sure you see it just as clearly as I do and as your listeners do. If voters continue to do this two-step shuffle between the Democrats and the Republicans, nothing will ever change. I mean, I hear it's amazing. As you know, I've campaigned for office before. I am hearing, and actually am hearing from some Republican voters as well, mm-hmm. that they are looking at third-party candidates. And I'm hearing from people that I know personally who were staunch Democrats and have had it with the Democrats in this state. They're disgusted with Martin O'Malley. They're disgusted with the fact that he promised to stop the BG&E rate hikes and didn't. Disgusted with their lives and the fact that we don't really have job creation in this state and that they're not – Martin O'Malley and the Democrats, and I'm not even talking about the Republicans, they're not looking at real progressive populist alternatives to the way we govern that would really improve the welfare of people in this state, small businesses in this state. So voters are looking for an alternative, and rightly so. If people voted for us, we would win. And the political landscape would be vastly different from what it is today. And it would be for the betterment of all of us.
Folks, join us here, 410-319-8888. We've had all the candidates on. We are going to have all the candidates on, Martin O'Malley, Robert Ehrlich, perhaps the Libertarians and Constitutional Party. We do have Maria Allwine from the Green Party with us. You can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at SteinerShow@gmail.com. We want to hear your thoughts and your questions. Would you vote Green? What are your questions for the Green Party? 410-319-8888. I suppose, I mean, that's part of the problem also is that you are not included in a lot of the political forums that take place.
Oh, how true that is.
Now, I was involved with one that almost took place. It didn't take place. A couple of them, and they were both clear they didn't want the minority parties there because they didn't meet a threshold. They would just kind of lengthen the process that didn't make any sense.
I will tell you that I called WTOP when the first announcement came out a few weeks ago that O'Malley and Ehrlich would debate on WTOP. And I had a very cordial, frank conversation with someone there who told me that while he was sympathetic to what I was saying, that the two major party candidates would not show up for a debate if the third party candidates were invited. And I told him, I said, well, there's two things there. I said, either you control the debates or they do. And he said, oh, we do. And I said, well, that's obviously not true since you are allowing Martin O'Malley and Bob Ehrlich to determine who the voters hear. I said, and then the second thing is, let that be your story. Invite all of us. And if they don't show up, the Green, the Libertarian, and the Constitution Party candidates will very happily debate. And you can certainly have the news story that the two major party candidates refuse to debate us. I will tell you that the Libertarians, the Constitution Party candidate, myself, we are formulating a response to our being deliberately excluded from the WJZ-TV debate. I don't want to get into that too much because we're still working it out, but we do have a unified response to this. So, and ultimately, it allows the media and, of course, the two major party candidates to determine who the voters hear. It really determines the outcome of an election to the point where this diminishes what's left of our democratic process. This isn't right. And I tell you, if Martin O'Malley and Bob Ehrlich have such great positions that they think they should be elected on, let the voters hear the alternatives and make that decision for themselves. What are they afraid of?
Maria Allwine is the Green Party candidate for governor here in the state of Maryland, 410-319-8888. Fran, you're on the air.
Mark, can you hear me?
Yes, Fran.
Oh, good. You can hear me today. Okay. here's what I'd like to say, and I have a question for you. I have voted Green Party in the past, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, one year, didn't Ralph Nader run under the Green Party?
For president,
and, yeah. I think she's put some very good points on this, and so have you. And my question here is, why is it that this party, all these years and even up to now, is not moving forward to where it is a third-party choice? Is it because there's not enough money to back this, to where you're out in front there campaigning to them? Why isn't that people don't know more about you? Because I have voted for you, so I'd like to know that.
You're right. You already know the answer. It's money. We don't take corporate contributions. We don't take money from PACs or unions, even though we're strong union supporters. It's a fact that the Green Party doesn't have much money. Obviously, we always have internal debates about this, but none of us feel that it is desirable or appropriate. We would be compromising ourselves and I think damaging ourselves irreparably if we took money from other donors, if we took money from anyone that wasn't just an individual donor. So we do the best we can with what we have. The other point is, and it's what we were just talking about, if the news media did its job and covered us fairly, we would increase our exposure. People would vote for us because I have real solutions to the problems that face this state. And if we were covered and the voters knew about us and understood what we were about, we would get the votes, we would grow as a party. And we would grow in the right way, not based on how much money we were getting from special interests.
Well, let me not follow up here. Let me get the listeners on the air here with Maria Allwine, who is the Green Party candidate for governor of the state of Maryland. 410, thank you, Fran, 410-319-8888. Lee, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is, what do you offer besides more rhetoric? You know, if you even get to be elected, what can you do that will that a hostile General Assembly will allow you to do? You'll be in the same boat as any other politician who offer good deeds and unable to pull them through because of the alienation of the General Assembly.
Well, let me talk to you about the General Assembly. I've done a lot of work primarily on BGE re-regulation issue. I've done a lot of work with the Maryland Coalition for BGE re-regulation. And I know a lot of the legislators in the Maryland General Assembly. And let me tell you, there are many progressive populist legislators in the General Assembly who would like nothing more than to work with a governor who reflected their values and who wanted to work with them to get the kind of progressive legislation passed that we need. You want to know what I would do for the state of Maryland? The first thing I would do is to create a state-owned and run bank. And without getting into it's not that complicated an issue, but a state-owned bank like the one in North Dakota would be its deposits are all the state funds, revenues, taxes collected, all the state receipts, and that money is plowed back into our communities, into our small businesses. We need to be revitalizing and nurturing our small businesses, not attracting big box retailers that get huge tax breaks and provide a few minimum wage jobs. That is the wrong way to be looking at growth and attracting jobs to Maryland. That's just the first thing I would do. I would also, at the very least, be dragging Constellation Energy, kicking and screaming, to a negotiating table where they kicked back rebates to the ratepayers who have been suffering under some of the highest electricity rates in the country, and we still are. That's the first thing I do about BGE. The second thing is we need to look at creating state-owned and run utilities as well, publicly owned and run utilities. We need a single-payer Medicare for all system. I work with Maryland Healthcare Now, and we are working at getting that through the state legislature. And California did so this year, but Governor Schwarzenegger vetoed it. That is something that Maryland needs to be leading the way on. We need to be providing health care for everybody. And unfortunately, the legislation that was passed at the federal level does not provide that.
I do have some questions about some things you raised, but other people raised some things first, and I'll come back to things that, that you just said to explain in greater detail, because I think a couple of things you mentioned are like almost an anathema to most people to think about. So I want to get to those things. 410-319-8888. Let's see. Lee. No, Lee, we just had Lee. Did we just talk to Lee? No, Lee, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Lee, you're on the air.
Yes, you sound very much like O'Malley. He promised to do something about the utility. And once he got in office, what happened? He ran into a stalemate. General Assembly would not cooperate. Too much lobbyist money into the mix. They're not going to do anything. Rhetoric is one thing, but how can you move the General Assembly into the direction you wish them to go without having some super pull? It's just rhetoric.
It's
promises made on empty promises.
Well, first of all, Martin O'Malley, the last go-round, took $70,000 from Constellation Energy. So there's strike one. There's no way that he is going to be able to spend his political capital on mitigating what has happened under deregulation. It's just not going to happen. Martin O'Malley stands on the side of Constellation Energy, and that's not my opinion. That's just a fact. Same with Bob Ehrlich. He took $80,000. You've got two politicians running again for governor who are guaranteed to do nothing for us, for the ratepayers, regarding BGE. How do you get the state legislature to work with you? Let me tell you that as I worked over the years with various state legislators and have talked to many of them, Republican and Democrat alike, many of them who voted for it know that it was a huge mistake and don't know what to do about it. That requires leadership. And that requires a governor who understands that when people vote for her or him, as it's our current governor, that you must legislate, you must govern on behalf of the people who voted for you, not the ones who are giving you money. I said that before. I can't say it enough times. And, you know, the legislature isn't a monolith. There are a lot of different views in the legislature, and there are, as I said before, progressive legislators who I think would welcome the chance to work with a progressive populist governor, which is what I would be.
Lee, thanks for your call. You raised some important points. 410-319-8888-D in Northeast, you're on the air.
Good evening. How are you this evening?
Well, welcome.
I want to return to what Fran had said in regard to the growth of the Green Party.
Mm-hmm.
Many of us remember the debacle of Al Gore and Bush running, and the fact that Nader of the Green Party ran at that same time. And many of us felt that the Green Party was nothing better than a spoiler, because historically, Republicans do not vote green. It's usually the Democrat, persons who are members of the Democratic Party or independents who would vote green. And in that race, had Nader not interjected himself, many of us felt that the election would have turned out differently. And so now we've come away just feeling that the Green Party is synonymous with being a spoiler, and that's unfortunate. It doesn't run to money. It doesn't run to, the sincerity of any particular candidate. But that cloud is still hanging over the Green Party for many of us who have long memories. I just thought I needed to share that, because no one else, I'm certain, would have the temerity to suggest that.
No, I hear you.
Really, we feel that the green means spoiler. And had Nader not interjected himself, the Green Party wouldn't be stuck with that. But that's where it is. And, perhaps there's a comment that your guests would want to make in that regard.
I have quite a bit to say about that. First of all, when Nader ran in 2000, it wasn't Nader that lost Gore that election. Gore that lost that election for two reasons. The Republican Party knew that Florida was going to be a battleground, and before the election, they disenfranchised 98,000 primarily African-American and minority voters off the voter rolls. That's a fact. That's something that's easily verified. That was 98,000 voters who should have voted, who were rightful voters, who were prevented from voting, and that was done prior to the election. The other thing is that once the debacle in Florida was underway and it was obvious that the Republicans in that state were stealing the election, Al Gore didn't fight, the Democrats didn't fight, and as far as I'm concerned, as painful as it was for all of us, they deserved to lose if they weren't going to fight and they were going to let this happen to them. And I also think, and I hate to say it, but it's true, I think that we have seen the Democrats do not have the spine that they need to have. And the time is long past when we look at any third party, when we should be looking at it as a spoiler. If you vote for us, we will be elected to office, and then we won't have to have this conversation anymore. I mean, if it's people vote anymore for the lesser of two evils, that is not what voting is supposed to be. And that is one of the primary things that has diminished our political process to the point where a lot of us just don't feel like participating in it anymore. And that's the most dangerous thing of all. We have got to move away from voting for the two major parties. They are not helping us. In fact, they are destroying a lot of what's good about this country. And I'm not saying they're doing it purposely, although I think some are. But the fact of the matter is they don't govern on behalf of the people. They govern on behalf of the people who give them money to get elected.
I think there are probably a lot of people who might agree with some of what you say about where political parties in America, even Tom Friedman, columnists like that, talk about the ossification of the Democrat and Republican parties.
Sure.
Some new formation needs to exist. But it seems to me that there's something sometimes, I think, as Dee pointed out, and some other people would say, about whether it's Green Party candidates or even more so than Libertarian and Constitutionalists, because especially constitutional party, they're so far on the fringe that people don't even know who they are. Libertarian at least has a strain of people in America who back it just because of this notion of what it means to be an American and be free.
Right.
And the Green Party, it has its roots in Europe and grew right. as a symbol of something different that was a pro-environment, smaller government, and a more democratic process. But there's something about people looking at the Green Party as left, which makes them not want to support it, or people like Dee, who might be a Green or another alternative party voter, who said, look, right now we're facing very tough choices, and if I put my vote there, then the right wing is going to move in, and I don't want the right wing moving in.
But we've been saying that for forever. And look what's happened to us. You know, you've got people voting Democratic, but you've got the rise of the Tea Party movement, conservatism. In fact, I don't even want to call it conservatism because I think the true conservatism, which I respect, has pretty much disappeared and been taken over by very, very right-wing in a lot of cases, what I would call fringe ideas that have seemed to be moving into the mainstream. So just exactly where has voting for the Democratic Party gotten us? And certainly in the last 2 years, exactly what has it done for our lives? What has it done for our communities? I mean, at some point, as I said before, people have got to stop behaving in the voting booth as if they have no choice. They do have a choice. You know, I will be on the ballot on November 2nd, and I hope people vote for me. You know, you've got to take the step.
Maria Allwise with us. She is candidate for governor on the Green Party ticket, 410-319-8888. Joanne, you're on the air.
How are you? I hope you don't hang up on me because I think I make some very valid points. I'd love to see a people party. You know, everybody wants to point the finger at the next person. Everybody wants to down the next person, you know. Nobody gets out into the trenches. Like this lady here with the Green Party, you knew that you were going to run. How long ago? You don't have to have money to get numbers, you know, and it's power in numbers. Why not go out into the communities and start early enough, and then you can give some people some information. Once people get educated, then they have a better ground to stand on to make a selection, and once they get strong, then they're able to hold folk accountable. And because after all, it's not so much the platform. People don't, they're not accountable for their promises, you know. And I don't need to hear about what the Democrats did or what the Republicans done or what the Green Party stands for. I want to know who is going to stand up for the people. When is there going to be a people party? A people party that starts early enough, as a matter of fact, once the election is over, begins for the next election. Go out into the streets. Go into the trenches. And then by the time 4 years passes by, you may have some power. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Joanne.
Well, I understand where Joanne's coming from, and I have been in the trenches, okay? I have been a peace and justice activist for many, many years. Certainly, let's maybe talk about something a little different. Let's talk about War and Peace. I've been done a lot of nonviolent civil disobedience against the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. I've seen the inside of a few jails. I've seen the inside of many courtrooms. I have worked with many state legislators on the BG&E issue. I lobby with Equality Maryland because I support marriage equality for all Marylanders. I've done an awful lot in the communities, various constituencies within the city and within our communities. So it's not that I'm not there. I have been, and I am, and most Greens are. Most Greens are so busy working on issues. You know, the Anne Arundel County Greens work a lot on the environmental issues, the Chesapeake Bay, which, you know, certainly we've had years of Democrats in power and the Bay's dead for all intents and purposes. And it doesn't seem to be improving. And so we're out there. And certainly the reason I'm a Green is because the Green Party is the People's Party.
We're here with Maria Allwine, Green Party candidate for governor of the state of Maryland. 410-319-8888. Let's see. Susan, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Susan. Welcome.
Hi. Yeah, I just called. I wanted, now my topic is a little bit, you know, way back in the queue. But
that's okay. Go ahead.
I've been talking about the problem of the governor having to deal with a hostile state legislature. The governor position in Maryland is much more powerful than in most other states. And the great power that the governor has is the power of the budget. The governor presents a proposed budget to the state legislature. They can take things off, but they can't add. So either they reject the whole thing and they have to start over again, or else they pretty much take what the governor puts out there.
Well, you're absolutely right, Susan, and that's part of my point is Governor O'Malley and former Governor Ehrlich, they should be leading on the issues that matter to us, because yes, here in Maryland, the governor is very powerful, much, as you say, much more powerful than in many other states. And that's the kind of leadership that we're looking for, that the voters need and they're not getting. And, you know, I don't mean this as, you know, being negative about Martin O'Malley personally or Robert Ehrlich personally, because I don't feel that way. And I think that our politics have devolved into nothing but personal attacks. My point is that the system has been so corrupted by money that neither a Democratic or a Republican Party candidate can really serve the people any longer.
Maria Allwines with us. We're going to take a brief break here in just a minute. And let's go to one more caller. Then we'll take a break. 410-319-8888. Cindy, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Cindy.
Well, hi, Mark. And, Maria, I really wish you had got the Carter Conway seat when you ran for state senator. But my question is there any way you think to educate people in the United States about a more proportional type of system, a representative type of system, which I guess Germany would be the lead example of, but a system where there are three, four, or five parties, and when there's a breakdown in power, then there has to be negotiation between three, four, and five parties to remake the government?
Well, that has its own set of problems, but to be honest with you, I'm in favor of that kind of system of government. And, you know, that's why in Germany, the Green Party is a very powerful force in that government. And in other countries that have that kind of representation, yes, third parties have a say in government. And I think it makes for a much more vibrant political life and a much fairer type of governance. So, you know, I appreciate that, Cindy, because you're absolutely right. It's going to take a while, though, a lot of work for Americans who feel that that type of system is appropriate to see it come to fruition. Certainly, what we could do in the short term is to institute instant runoff voting. And there are some municipalities and a couple of states that use it. And that would allow third parties, when they're on the ballot, that you could rank your choice. So that you could, if you really want to vote for me, I'm number one. And you want Martin O'Malley because you don't want Bob Ehrlich. Okay, so Martin O'Malley's number two, and then you don't even have to put in a number three if there's nobody. And as the candidates don't get enough votes, the choices change. So there's no chance that someone you really don't want to vote, you know, that you don't want to get in, you don't have to vote for that person, and you can have what you want. That's a good first step toward a much fairer vote.
Sustainable products. Up-to-date information can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. We are here with Maria Allwine, who is the Green Party candidate for governor. Number here is 410-319-8888 to join in this conversation. Ask your questions of the woman who would be governor running on the Green Party ticket. 410-319-8888. Algerie writes in on Facebook. She wants to know two things. One, what is Maria's outlook on the BRAC realignment coming to places like Fort Meade and Aberdeen as a Green Party candidate? And the second question is it possible to have a state bank like North Dakota? I would like to see that happen, but it sounds more like, let me get the rest of this message, more like Mission Impossible. So, BRAC.
Well, BRAC, as governor, I would not have pursued more development and more expansion. I am very concerned that as a state, Maryland is far overdeveloped, that it uses more resources in service of that development that it has and that it can afford. I favor a steady state approach to development where you actually look inward to your existing communities and you revitalize those. You pour your financial resources into those, into your small businesses, which are and always should be the prime economic driver in the state. I'm concerned about the development that was just approved, and certainly against the wishes of a lot of the surrounding communities near Fort Meade. So that's, you know, that's not the way you want to do things in this state or any state. So that's a concern. I don't think Maryland's roads or infrastructure is equipped to handle the huge influx of jobs and families that's going to occur under BRAC. What was the second part? I'm sorry.
Well, the second part had to do with the savings bank.
State bank.
But, yes. I mean, one of the things I think people would hear what you just said and want to push that further in that there are people in this city and state who are very worried about jobs, who don't make enough money.
You bet.
And when you see BRAC come in, it brings high-paid government jobs that people want to have. And it reminds me in some ways of the fight over Walmart sometimes, where people don't. Well, I'll get to that in a minute. Let's get to that in a minute.
No, I'm not. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. There is a way to bring in high paying government jobs and a way not to. I think it's too much. I don't think we're prepared for it, and I think that we're going to have problems, you know, with schools. Where are we going to get the money for the schools that are going to be needed? We can't even repair the roads we have. Of course, we are spending $2.5 billion on the Intercounty Connector, which I think is a dreadful and misbegotten use of our money. But that's another.
But there it goes. It's being built.
But there it goes. That's right. I certainly would not have done that. That money should be invested in mass transit. You want to bring those jobs here, and we need them. But you need to make sure that the infrastructure, including mass transit, is going to support that. You can't just, go off willy-nilly and say, this is a great idea, let's do it, and let's bring everything here. And then it comes, and then you go, oh, my, how are we going to do this, 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 and this? And then, you know, then you've got a problem. And then you've got communities that aren't sustainable. You've got people sitting in traffic for even longer than we do, I mean, as an example. Or you've got people who have no way to get to work because they need to use a bus or mass transit, and there isn't any. So, you know, it's not an either or, but it is saying that if you're going to do something like attracting BRAC, like, you know, wanting that and getting that here, you need to be prepared for it, and we're not.
So the state bank. I think that deserves, I think what Audrey and others are saying here is this deserves a little bit more explanation. It doesn't quite compute for most people.
Sure. And, you know, it's not that complicated, actually. A state bank would be created. It is not part of the FDIC system. It is backed by the good credit and faith of the state of Maryland. And what it does is, it exists as a state-owned and operated entity. All of the state's receipts, and that's all of the taxes that the state collects, all the fees it collects, everything, pensions, everything, are deposited into the bank. And that's how the bank is capitalized. I mean, at its inception, because you don't want to cause the private banks that are already doing business here to collapse and be left with no deposits, but you float a bond issue and you can capitalize it that way. But ultimately, you have a captive depositor base in that it's all state receipts. But the bank, now the one in North Dakota, of course, it was created 90 years ago.
1919.
Right. But it existed as a response to the problems that farmers in the Midwest were having during that period of time. And that's a history lesson that we don't have time to go into here. So the Bank of North Dakota is very focused on making sure that the farmers in that state have what they need. Now, in Maryland, I envision a state-owned and run bank as a bank that drives small businesses. That's where I would want to see the money go back to.
How would you even begin to get that bank started? I mean, in the state of Maryland or any place else. I mean, I think that there are a lot of people. I mean, there are gubernatorial candidates in both Florida and Oregon. We're talking mainstream not that you're not mainstream, Maria, Democratic candidates who are running for governor in those states. The Washington State Legislature has also been pushing this from the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. The Vermont House is considering it.
Right.
There are places saying that we need to have this. And there are these kind of – so it's not an idea that seems as – I'm saying this because I don't want people to think about this as not being – as kooky and fringy an idea as it sounds.
There are over 20 states looking at this, seriously.
And North Dakota being one of the only states in the nation that is solvent.
Right.
People say in large part because it has a state bank.
Exactly.
But getting that even discussed, given the banking interests of the state of Maryland, is no easy trick. I mean, it would change the nature of banking. And we have in our town one of our underwriters here,
sure.
Credit unions, which are places that are owned by the people that
right.
Put their deposits in.
Of course,
in them.
I support credit unions. Yes. No, this is you spend your political capital, you work with the legislature, and you do get it done. This is not something that cannot be done. I mean, it's just a question of where your priorities lie and the kind of leadership that you're going to provide. And yes, it's a huge change, and it would affect every aspect of not only our government, but really of our lives.
Well, a few practical questions as governor here. And folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. We'll come back to your calls here when you call in. We're talking to Maria Allwine, who's running to be governor of the state of Maryland. On the Green Party ticket, 410-319-8888. And while I'm doing that, Adrian wrote in on Facebook page, "Thanks, Mark, for having Maria on today. I am weary of the perpetuation of the idea that there are only two at most choices when it comes to elections. The argument that people who vote for the third party candidates, quote, don't have a voice, end quote, in Maryland politics is false. I wish more people would vote their desired outcome rather than the predicted outcome. If they did, perhaps then the political landscape here would be actually changed. Third-party candidates shake things up and get people out of their lull," writes in Adrian Hilliard. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to the Facebook pages and put your comments there as well. But the state faces some very real issues here. And, you know, you talk about creating a state-owned utility. I mean, people don't like the idea of state-owned anythings. I mean, they might want a Medicare system for all. They want single-payer systems that pass through and take care of people's health care. But the idea that a government bureaucracy is going to do any better than a corporate bureaucracy running a large business makes very little sense to most people.
Let me ask you this question. We've had many years of corporate power being ascendant. And look what has happened, not only to our economy, look what's happened to our political process, look what's happened to our lives. I mean, I think that people who say no government, less government, I think they're misguided. I understand what they're saying. Look, we all get frustrated with a lot of the really stupid regulations or stupid restrictions that government places on us that make life a lot difficult than it should be. But ultimately, all you have to do is, for example, look at BP. I mean, the result of regulations not being enforced, the result of the revolving door between lobbyists and government, between corporations and government. Look at the egg recall, 1.5 billion eggs. And, you know, there are regulations on the book. They're not being enforced. I don't think we want no government. And I think that to look at a very viable alternative to an economic model that has failed us, and that would be the viable alternative being the state-owned bank, because it seems maybe not doable or it would shake things up. I think it's a mistake. In fact, I think that we here in Maryland and other states need to get serious about a different economic model. And I think that a state-owned bank is a good first step.
One of the things in the state of Maryland that we can't seem to fix, a couple of things I'll raise, you know, see what you would say about them. A is the juvenile justice and criminal justice system. That through every governor we've been unable, we're doing it more now under Governor Martin O'Malley, I will say, and under his new Department of Juvenile Services than ever been done before, mm-hmm. To reform that system. But the system is like a battleship and can't be changed. And we're still locking up juveniles as adults. And we'll talk about that on tomorrow's show. And we are still incarcerating record numbers of African-American young men and women for nonviolent crimes. And so the question is, what does the governor do? How does the governor lead on that issue?
Well, the first thing is certainly the reason for a lot of the incarceration is the failed war on drugs. And as governor, and I think all governors need to be looking at alternatives to locking people up. California, I hope they legalize marijuana. I really do. I am in favor of legalization of drugs and treating addiction, and there will always be people addicted, as a health issue and providing treatment. Our society would look vastly different, and our jails would be a lot less crowded if we got serious about rethinking the failed war on drugs. As far as the juvenile justice system, it's been a disaster for so long. It is going to take quite a bit to right it. Locking juveniles up with adults and trying them as adults is utterly wrong, counterproductive, turns people into criminals. You can't have that. We can't be doing that. But, you know, I want to speak also to the larger issue. The United States has become, its police has become militarized. And a lot of the reason for that is because, you know, after 9/11, everything changed. We have the Department of Homeland Security. We all know that we're being watched and spied on. And, you know, you don't have to be an activist to be watched and spied on. And I think that we have gotten very much away from our compassion as a people. Here in this country, we are very focused on punishment and not rehabilitation. Now, I am not saying that there aren't people who shouldn't be locked up. One of the functions of government is to protect us from the most dangerous elements of our society. I don't think you're going to have anybody running for office or anybody who's sane who's going to deny that, or who's going to want to craft a policy that doesn't support that. However, we do not want to continue to create criminals, you know, with people who wouldn't have been. This is counterproductive to us as a society. It contributes to the enormous crime rate here in Baltimore City. I mean, we really need to look at our justice system and how we look at people in our society who are engaging in behaviors that they shouldn't be engaging in and who are doing crimes. But I am in favor of rehabilitation and certainly not locking up juveniles with adults and trying them as adults.
We're here with Maria Allwine, who is the Maryland Green Party candidate for governor. 410-319-8888. Perry in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Perry. You're on the air.
How you doing? I was just informed that we had a third candidate on the ballot running against O'Malley and Early. And I was just telling him, like, I know enough about those two to say that we don't need either one of them in office. Early's already had his run. And wasn't impressed there. Disappointed, actually. O'Malley, we gave him a chance, too, and he said one thing and did another so many times. So it's like, it gets to a point where it gets old. Not only that, but you don't hear any mention of Baltimore City from either one of these two candidates. And it's
That's
like,
true.
It's county, 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 county. And people in Baltimore ain't stupid. We know that a lot of the tax money coming from the people in the county, mainly because they had better jobs out there. So naturally, I get that they want to appeal to the county, but it's almost like they forget about the city. And I was just listening to the next point you guys were making about the system, the juvenile system. And you're right, it makes no sense at all for somebody to get charged as an adult for simple things like possession and things like that, especially when you look at some of the crimes that you get slapped on the wrist with for. So, I mean, the whole system is combobulated. It's like it's just all screwed up. And, I mean, I'm kind of happy that there is a third candidate running against these two, because at first I was under the impression that we had no choice but to go from either the problem we had before or keeping the problem that we had. So I feel a little good about that.
Good.
So I was just telling a couple of coworkers the other day as a third person on the ballot. So, like, people need to know that. Like, I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one that didn't know. I mean, granted, you know, some people can be more active into, you know, as far as looking at titty types of things. But the thing is, when you're working 40 hours a week, you just want to go home and get some sleep. You know what I mean? You don't really have a lot of time. And you got to work 40 hours a week in order to get a decent paycheck.
You're right about that, Perry.
Perry, you're right about it. I appreciate the call. And I guess that a lot of people don't know about the party that's running here, the Green Party, running as a third party here in this state election. And there are others running besides you on this ticket. I know that there was a real tragedy when the woman who was running for senator against Republican and Democratic Party candidates, Barbara Mikulski, and she was really young. She was
30.
30
she
years
just
old.
Just turned 30.
Her Natasha name, Pettigrew from Prince George's County, right?
Yes. And I tell you, she not only shared Green Party values, she was, from the time she was a teenager, she worked with homeless, drug-addicted people. She was a real public servant when she wasn't, you know, in the spotlight. It was just something, it was the way she lived her life. And when she came to us, because she took a year off to from law school, she had 2 degrees from Ohio State and was in law school at Florida State, came to us and wanted to run for Senate. She was so outraged and so upset by what she saw going on in people's lives, what she saw going on in this country, very concerned about education issues, and she wanted to run. And she came to us, and we were so impressed with her. Not only we liked her so much as a person, but we really felt that she had a political future ahead of her. She was just really, really, really good. And to have her killed at all, and then certainly killed in the way that she was just devastating.
She was riding her bicycle.
She was
riding
her bicycle
SUV.
And was hit by a Cadillac Escalade. And Natasha was in a turn lane. She was where she was supposed to be. I mean, and that, you know, we could have a whole issue, a show on transportation issues and the need for safe bicycle lanes and everything else. But I'm happy to say that Kenneth Henry, Natasha's mom, a devoted mother, is running in Natasha's place. So Kenneth Henry's name is on the ballot, and you can certainly vote for her. She is the Green Party nominee for U.S. Senate. And we also have Mike Shea running as Anne Arundel County Executive, George Gluck running for Montgomery County Council, and Joe Lane looking to be one of the next Washington County Commissioners. So, you know, we do have Greens running in this state. And as I said at the beginning of the program, you know, if we can get the media to cover us, if they would do their jobs and cover us and let the voters know who we are, you'd have a real choice.
Speaking of choices, one of the things that I don't care who the governor is coming up next is going to have to face is the fact that the Maryland state budget is about to
be about close to $2 billion.
In debt.
In debt, yeah.
And on top of that, a couple of billion more from our pensions and paying
yes.
for health care.
Oh, yes.
So how does anybody, whether they're green, an elephant, or a donkey, or whoever the other is, how do they pay for that? How do you address that issue?
The first thing you do is you don't kick the can down the road, all right? That said, the first thing you do is you close the corporate tax loopholes.
Just talk about that 1 second. They said even if you did that in the state of Maryland.
Oh, it doesn't close the gap.
You would get maybe at most $200 million.
That's exactly right. That's a start. All right, we need to do
that.
We're
talking about billions here.
I know. I realize that. But we need to get serious. And the first thing you're going to do is close the loopholes. Second thing you do is you increase the marginal tax rate on the highest earners. And I don't want to hear the conventional wisdom, which is nothing but a bunch of nonsense about millionaires leaving the state. I'll tell you what, anybody wants to leave the state, you go right ahead. Those of us who believe in Maryland will stay here, we'll pay our taxes, and we'll contribute to the common good, because that's what you have to do if you want to live in a civilized society. Things have gotten very skewed as far as the tax rates in this state. And obviously, we know, and this is one thing that people are so upset about, is that for individuals, the burden, we're the fourth highest in the nation. But for corporations, it's only the 15th highest, but we're the 29th in collections, which means we're not collecting all of the taxes that are owed to us. Okay, that's a start. The other thing is I'm in favor of a financial transactions tax. I'd like to explore whether that can be done at the state level. I mean, certainly, I think most people have heard about it being discussed at the federal level. I don't think that people in Congress have the spine or the wherewithal to do it. But it's something that on the state level, we need to get very serious about. You know, another thing, excuse me, instituting a Medicare for all system will save money. The report is old. The study is old. We're commissioning a new report to get up-to-date figures. But the latest figures I had was about $300 million in the first year savings. That, you know, there are alternatives.
Could it be that there's no solution to that? That there is no way to deal with the question that we have billions of dollars of debt facing this state and every state in the country, that given that the crisis in the economy and the crisis in state government budgets, the way it's being structured, there is no answer?
I don't think it's that there's no answer. There's no answer with the way government and business are working today. That you have to be bold and courageous and be willing to look at solutions that maybe haven't been considered or that may be distasteful to certain elements of, say, the business community or the wealthy. But we have to do it. Our governments have been defunded, and they've been defunded purposely. And it's up to us. It's up to me as a leader to say this isn't the way it's going to be.
Real One, thank you so much for being here. We are out of time.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Running for a Green Party candidate, running for a governor on the Green Party ticket, and go quickly, very quickly.
I just visit my website at www.allwineforgovernor.org, and I want to hear from you. Thank you.
And we'll have the information up on our website. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Division of Transplantation, where patients' lives are enhanced by a renowned transplant program known for innovation and excellence in kidney, liver, and pancreas transplants. For more information, the number is 1-800-492-5538. In the next hour, we'll be going to Ondalmarva. You'll hear a candidate, Robert Ehrlich, talk about the Eastern Shore and talk to environmental historian Mike Lewis. And very quickly, let me just add that support for this station, WEA, is provided by the Mid-Atlantic Neurosurgical Associates, MANA, a center dedicated to people who suffer from brain, spine, and pain disorders. With three Baltimore locations, MANA's team of pain management physicians and surgeons provide a wide range of sensitive and compassionate treatment options to improve health and well-being of its patients. For more information, online, manapaincenter.com or 410-601-8300.